Mulana Jalal ad-Din Muhammad Balkhi Rumi, known simply as Mulana in Persian and around the world as Rumi, was a poetic genius, a theologian, and an enlightened person who graced our planet. 8 centuries after his life on Earth, the deep and diverse influence of his legacy still remains and continues to awaken the hearts of many beyond all cultures and boundaries. His prolific work has been translated into many languages. Rumi was heir to the rich literary and cultural heritage of Persia or ancient Iran and composed his great mystical poems in the Persian language. He was born in the city of Balkh, which was part of the Persian Empire that is today found in Afghanistan. He lived and worked for most of his life under the Seljuk Empire, passing from this world in the city of Konya, which is present-day Turkey. In addition to his poetry, Rumi's prose works, which include Fihe Mafi, or In It What's In It, Majolese Sabae, or Seven Sessions, and Maktubot, or The Letters, also offer his sage insight and wisdom. Today on Between Master and Disciples, we invite you to listen to an excerpt of Rumi's teachings from the Fihe Mafi, Discourses 39 and 40.
Discourse 39. Hisam-e-Din Afsanjani, before entering the service and society of dervishes, was a great debater. Wherever he went, he engaged vigorously in argument and controversy. He used to debate well and spoke excellently, but once he took up the company of dervishes, his heart turned completely against debate. Whoever desires to sit next to God, let them sit with lovers of God. These intellectual sciences are a game and a waste of life compared to the spiritual experiences of the dervishes.
This way of desirelessness is the way to attain your desires. Whatever you have longed for will come to you on this path, whether the shattering of armies, victory over your enemy, capturing kingdoms, bringing people to obedience, excelling your contemporaries, or elegance of speech. When you have chosen the way of poverty, these things come to you. No one has ever travelled this road and had cause to complain, contrary to other ways where only 1 out of 100,000 reach their goal, and even they do not always find happiness and peace. For every desire has many branching paths to reach that goal. It is long and arduous, full of pitfalls and obstacles, and in the end, it is possible those twisting paths will fall short of your desire.
However, once you enter the world of poverty and practice it, God bestows on you kingdoms and worlds you never imagined, and you feel quite ashamed of what you longed for at first. Ah, you cry, with such reality in existence, how could I have sought after such foolishness? But God says, if only you had risen above such desires, becoming detached from them and seeing them for what they were, all would have been well. Yet now, when they enter your thoughts and you avoid them for my sake, my grace is infinite, so of course I make them attainable to you.
So it happened with Muhammad. Before he attained his goal and became famous, he listened to the elegant speech and eloquence of the Arabs, and he wished that he too could speak so well. Yet once the invisible worlds were revealed to him, and he became intoxicated with God, his heart turned completely against that desire and longing. God declared, "I have given you the elegance and eloquence that you sought." The prophet answered, "Lord, of what use are they to me? I am indifferent to them and have no desire for them."
God replied, "Do not worry, your original desire shall come to pass, and yet your indifference will remain, so that desire cannot harm you." God bestowed on him such speech that the entire world, from his time until today, has composed and still composes volumes expounding it, and yet people fall short of comprehending all that it contains. God also declared, "Your companions, out of weakness and fear for their lives, whisper your name only in secret. But I will publish your greatness abroad, so that men and women will shout it aloud in sweet intonations 5 times daily on the high minarets in all regions of the world. Your name will be famous in the East and the West."
It is the same with anyone who gambles their life upon this way. To them, all objectives, whether religious or mundane, become attainable. None have ever had cause to complain. The words of the saint are the true coin. The words of others are but imitation. Imitation is a branch of the true coin. Imitation is like a wooden carving in the shape of a foot. That wooden foot was filched from a real foot and shaped to its measure. If no foot existed, how could there be a copy? Therefore, some speech is true coin and some imitation. They resemble each other. Only discrimination can recognize the difference. This critical perception is real faith.
Do you not see how Moses threw down his rod and it became a serpent, and the staffs and ropes of the magicians also became serpents? But the Pharaoh, who lacked insight, saw no difference between them, while Moses, who possessed discernment, could see truth from sorcery. Through discrimination, Moses became a believer. So we realize that faith is discrimination.
The root of our judgment is divine revelation. But after mingling with the thoughts, senses, and desires of mortal creatures, that original grace has vanished. How does our judgment resemble the delicacy of revelation now?
This is like the water that flows in turrets towards the city. There at its fountainhead, see how pure and fine it is. But once it enters the city and passes through the gardens, quarters, and houses of the inhabitants, so many people wash their hands, faces, feet, and other parts in it, and their clothes and carpets, and the urine of all the people, and the dung of horses and mules is poured into it. Look at this water when it passes out the other side of the city. It is still the same water, able to turn dust into clay, quench the thirsty, make the field green, yet discrimination can see the water is polluted and has lost its original clarity.
Water that never grows stale, that is what we need. Water that can cleanse the impurities of the world, and yet they leave no trace in it. It retains its limpid and clear state and is never tainted. This is the water of truth. So, faith is discrimination, distinguishing truth from falsehood and the true coin from the fake. These words are valuable to everyone possessing that critical perception, but are wasted on those who cannot see the difference.
If these words fall into the hands of those who cannot discern, it is like giving precious pearls to children who do not know their value. Later, if you offer them apples, they will gladly trade them for pearls, since they know no better. Aboye Seed, when a child, was taken by his father to school to learn jurisprudence. When he was brought before the schoolmaster, he asked, "Is this the jurisprudence of God?" They said, "This is the jurisprudence of Abu Hanife."
He said, "I want the jurisprudence of God." When he was brought before the grammar teacher, he asked, "Is this the grammar of God?" The teacher said, "This is the grammar of Sibuye." Abu Yazid said, "I do not want it." He spoke this way wherever his father took him. His father could do nothing with him, and finally let him be. Later, he came to Baghdad upon his quest, and as soon as he saw Janid, he shouted, "This is the jurisprudence of God."
How could it be that a lamb would not recognize its own mother on whose milk it has been suckled? So forget the form. There was a certain sheikh who kept his disciples standing with their hands folded in service. They asked him, "Sheikh, why do you not let this class sit down? This is not the practice of dervishes. This is the custom of princes and kings." He replied, No, be silent. You must respect this way to gain full benefit. Though respect lies within the heart, yet the outer is the frontispiece of the inner.
From the frontispiece of a book, people know what it contains. From outward respect, bowing the head and standing, can be seen what respect they have inwardly, and their respect for God.
Discourse 40. Johara, the Sultan's servant, said, "We have been told that we must repeat the Muslim credo 5 times during our lifetime. What if we don't understand the words or do not memorize them correctly? After death, what questions will we be asked, seeing that we have forgotten even the questions we were taught?"
Rumi replied, "If you forget what you have learned, then of course you become a clean slate, suitable for questions that you have not learned. Now, this minute, you are listening to me. You accept some part of what I say because you have heard similar things before, but some you only half accept, and concerning other things you hesitate. No one hears this rejection or acceptance, or the debate going on within you. Even though you are listening, no sound or voice comes to your ear from within you. If you search inwardly, you will find no instrument of speech.
This coming of yours to visit me is itself a question without a throat or tongue, namely, show me a way and explain what you have shown. My sitting with you, whether silent or speaking, is an answer to your hidden questions. When you wait upon the king, that is a question addressed to the king and an answer. Every day the king questions his servants without tongue. How do you stand? How do you eat? How do you look? If anyone has a wry look within them, their answer inevitably comes out awry, and they cannot give a straight answer."
In the same way, someone who stammers, however much they wish to speak straight, is unable to do so. A goldsmith who rubs gold against a stone is questioning the gold, and gold answers, "This is I am pure," or "I am alloyed." The crucible knows, after you've been tested, whether you are gold or merely copper with gold covering.
Hunger is a questioning of nature. There is a crack in the body's house. Give a brick. Give clay. Eating is an answer. Take. Not eating is also an answer. Wait until later. The brick is not yet dry. The physician comes and takes our pulse. That is a question. The throbbing of the vein is the answer. Examining the urine is an unspoken question and answer. To cast a seed into the ground is a question. Will you give fruit? The growing of the tree is an answer without a tongue, because the answer is wordless. The question must be wordless too.
A king read 3 letters from the same man but did not answer. The subject wrote a complaint saying, "3 times now I have petitioned your majesty. Let your majesty at least say whether my petition has been accepted or rejected." The king wrote on the back of the letter, "Do you not know that refusing an answer is an answer itself, and that the answer to a fool is silence?"
A tree's not growing is a refusal to answer, and is an answer itself. Every motion people make is a question. Whatever happens to them, whether sorrow or joy, is an answer. If they hear a pleasant answer, they show their thanks. Thanks is expressed by asking the same kind of question again. If they hear an unpleasant answer, they quickly ask God's forgiveness and do not repeat that kind of question. If only when our might came upon them, they had been humble. But their hearts were hard.
In other words, they did not understand that the answer they received came from the question they asked. And Satan decked out fair to them what they were doing. This means they saw the answer to their question but said, "This ugly answer is not appropriate to our fair question." They did not realize that smoke comes from the fuel not the fire. The drier the fuel, the cleaner the flame. If you entrust your garden to a gardener and you smell a disagreeable odor, suspect the gardener and not the garden.
Therefore, whatever happens to you, correct your own self, then you will not have to fight with someone every day. If others say, "Everything is from God," we reply, "Then to reproach one's own self and to let the world be is also from God." This is like the story of a boy who shook down apricots from a tree and ate them. The owner of the orchard caught him and said, "Aren't you afraid of God's punishment?" The boy said, "Why should I be afraid? The tree belongs to God, and I am God's servant." God's servant ate God's fruit.
The owner said, "Wait and see what answer I shall give you. Fetch a rope, tie him to this tree, and beat him until the answer is made clear." The boy said, "Aren't you afraid of God's punishment?" The owner answered, "Why should I be afraid? You are God's servant, and this is God's stick. I am beating God's servant with God's stick."
The moral is that this world is like an echo. Whatever you say, whether good or evil, you hear the same from the mountain. If you think, "I spoke beautifully and the mountain gave an ugly answer," this is impossible. When the nightingale sings in the mountain, does the mountain return the voice of a raven or a donkey? Speak sweetly when crossing the mountain pass. The azure sky sends back the note of sweetness from your own throat.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Between Master and Disciples. Coming up next is Planet Earth, Our Loving Home, right after Noteworthy News, here on Supreme Master Television. May heaven's blessings grace all lands.
For more details, please visit www.suprememastertv.com/BMD.